Standing in the shadows of love, I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. Can't you see me standing in the shadows of love? I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. I wanna run, but there's nowhere to go.
That was Levi Stubbs and the Four Tops with Standing in the Shadows of Love. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that is on a new mission to make America think again. We hope our show will shine a light on the issues that are changing our lives and changing America's course for the future. I'm your host, recently retired United States Senator Michael D. Brown. I've been in the shadows for the past 18 years, but now I'm stepping into the light. Together with my brilliant co-host, Liberty Jones, we want to start a dialogue with America about the truth, because it's what happens in the shadows that changes the world. We're not going to tell you how to feel or who to vote for. We're just going to bring forth the experts who have been there and can give you the information you need to make educated decisions, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. So here we are tonight, and we don't have a guest, and we've decided that Liberty and I have just decided that we're going to come on and talk about, there's so much going on in the world that we're going to talk about what's going on. And if you're interested in talking to either one of us, or you have a question, please feel free to call in. The call-in number is 888-627-6008. And so here we go. Welcome, Liberty. How are you?
Hi, Senator Brown. I'm doing wonderful today. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, always. I'm doing great. You know, for an old guy, I went out and I went to a jazz brunch today. So that was really cool.
How
and
wonderful.
I watched an amazing basketball game last night where Duke was ahead for the whole game until the last 17 seconds. And then they lost the lead by 1 point, and they lost the game. They lost the game in the last 17 seconds. It was amazing. And today, a shout out to the University of Connecticut women who have become the national champions in basketball for the 12th time. I mean, it's just amazing. It's an amazing record. And to Ovechkin, who is the hockey player for the Capitals, who broke Wayne Gretzky's longstanding record with 895 career goals. He scored 895 career goals. So that's amazing, too. And to Ovi, way to go, bud. We're proud of you. And I'm not even a hockey fan necessarily, but it's great to see things like that happen. So what have you been up to? Riding your new bike. I understand you have a new old bike.
Well, absolutely. You know, I wish that bike could take me as far as those courageous athletes. 185 wins is truly remarkable.
Yeah. It's just, it's amazing. And you know what? I've been a college basketball fan for a very long time. And we started watching women's basketball, Pat and I, my wife and I, because my wife was head of the Alumni Association at Maryland, and we would get invited to a couple of basketball games, and some of them were women's games, and they were really good. And we were just shocked. We'd go to the men's games, and there wouldn't be an empty seat. But you go to the women's games, and there were more people in the band and in the cheerleading squad than there were at the games. And the Maryland Terrapin girls were just amazing. They were amazing. And, they were amazing this time. They got into the Sweet 16, just like the boys did. So we started watching it. And let me tell you, man, in the last few years, it's gotten really, really competitive. Really competitive in women's sports.
Absolutely. I hear women's sports is finally getting a lot of recognition, women's basketball recently.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, women's soccer has for a while.
Yeah, and
now Caitlin Clark has put women's basketball is raised the profile of it. You know, when I was young, I got to see Pele play in his prime, but nobody knew what soccer was in in America. Absolutely. Nobody knew what it was. It was like some really strange sport. And I just happened to, at 16 years old, I went to work for a professional soccer player, which was really strange because we didn't have professional soccer players, really many of them in the United States, but he was from Bermuda and he was retired. You know, you retire from soccer at like 35 because it's such a, right? It's such a strenuous sport. But Gene was about 40 mm-hmm. years old and he had retired from the sport and he started a company and I worked for him. So Pelé came to the United States. He still played for Santos and he came to the United States mm-hmm. and he played an exhibition game and I got to go. He drugged me. I'm like, what? I don't soccer. What's that? And he said, no, you got to see this guy, man.
Oh, wow.
If you see him. And he scored a goal.
That's awesome. You know, that's when soccer and sports, I feel like, were so much more artistic than they are nowadays. I think the camera has really changed the mindset of a lot of the players, especially on the Brazil team. You know, nowadays we're not even doing that good. And when Pelé was the star, he was so inspirational. It was so artistic to watch him play. He just danced.
Let me tell you something I learned about Brazilian soccer players. They're badasses. Because there was a bad call by the ref. They thought there was a bad call by the referee, and they kind of jumped on him, right? They you know, started yelling at him. And we don't do that here. So fans booed. They booed the Brazilian soccer team, and they jumped up on the dugout. And they were like, come on, you want a piece of us? Come on. I mean, there were like 20,000 fans, and they were willing to take them all on. You know, I said, wow, these guys are tough. You know. And it was an exhibition game.
It's beautiful to see the people riled up fighting something.
Yeah, it didn't even count, and they were pissed. So let me ask you, there's been a lot going on this week. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of protests yesterday across the world, not just mm-hmm. across the country, but across the world, about what's gone on. And, you know, I want to know, as a young person, what worries you about what's going on? What are your worries about the future?
You know, after seeing the news this week, which was truly alarming, and, you know, even talking about this conversation on soccer, right? I think it's so beautiful to reflect on how much a player can achieve in a sport. Because, you know, what's driving that player the most is the passion of his fans cheering him on. You know, if you have a soccer player playing in a match with no one supporting him and he's just doing it out of the free merit, I'm sure he's going to go far, but he's going to go so much farther if he has a whole group of fans supporting him, fighting for him when he feels the ref does a bad call. And, you know, moving back to this question, you know, even had that conversation makes me reflect on the importance of community and truly the importance of everyone putting their minds together and their passion and their aspiration together to move toward a communal goal. And so right now, my biggest worry is that the people aren't mobilizing enough, aren't communicating enough, and are getting distracted from keeping their eyes on the prize. You know, I think that there's so much tragedy.
Well, we've lost you, Liberty. We'll try to get her back up. But yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I wonder if our problem isn't that we don't need anybody. I see you up there. I don't know why I can't hear you, but you know, I think that we don't need each other the way we used to need each other, right? We all go down our own little rabbit holes, especially young people. And we don't deal with each other anymore. You know, you can spend your whole life without doing, you know, without having to talk to anybody. You can go through your day and go to a bank machine and get your money and go to the checkout store and, you know, the grocery store and check yourself out and go through the whole day without ever talking to anybody. That was impossible when I was your age. So we got you back. Thank you. So as you were saying, you worry about the community.
I do. I worry that we're not moving together towards a common goal sometimes, you know? I think right now we're doing a lot of watching and seeing the pain, and that we're not even able to have a shared platform where we can be on the same wavelength with each other. How are we going to ever reach any goal or success together that satisfies all of us if we're not on the same terms with what we want? You know, that's my biggest worry, to put it into sport terms.
Well, wow. And, you know, you talk about how fans encourage the athlete to go further. You know, my athletic career was mostly my mother looking embarrassed on the sidelines because I was the worst kid on the Little League team. But yeah, it's if we can't bring ourselves together to move forward. My question again is the same thing that I asked Marianne last week. Was Karl Marx right? Karl Marx would have told you this is what happens in a democracy and in capitalism. When everybody has to follow their own self-interest, there's no way that everybody can follow a common interest to reach a common goal, kind of what you're talking about. And I wonder if unfortunately, that's not the case. If there's something that we need to do, I always thought that because we enshrine things like minority rights in our constitution and in our former government, that we would include everybody and we could get over that whole self-centered thing. But man, it sure seems that way these days when you've got everybody out there during a campaign. I know you were involved. During the campaign, we all talked about democracy and how democracy was at stake, and it's still at stake, and this is important. But what did America say? Half of America said, screw democracy. We want cheap eggs and cheap gas. By the way, we're not getting that, but you know what I mean? They right? Have our priorities become so self-centered that we really don't care about anything but our own whatever basic parochial interests are. I mean, I hope that's not the case. I'll tell you what I worry about. I want you to tell me a couple of specifics. I worry about Social Security because I'm on it. I worry about healthcare because I need it. So what do you worry about? What do you worry is not going to be there for Liberty Jones when she needs it?
You know, those are some great policies that I think are really important. Those are our basic rights as humans, having a healthcare that sustains us, you know, and having being able to access those foods like eggs that are so crucial, especially, you know, as a college student. There are some days where all I can eat are eggs. How am I supposed to sustain myself if I can not even afford the $20 eggs on the counter? So I think basic rights are something that are so important, not only for your body, right? But for your mind as well. And what I hope for is that, you know, the United States, such a remarkable country with so much different type of abundance and so many different advancements technologically, economically even. I hope that we don't go backwards and that we continue to evolve, and that when I'm able to have kids, they won't even need to worry about eggs and their basic rights, because they'll be able to have equality for them in ways that'll sustain their minds as well, like education and a space and a platform in the world where they feel they can be who they want to be without being judged for their differences. And so I think right now my biggest issue is seeing so many different groups in the community feeling that they are having their voice taken away from them. And you know, my question to you, Senator Brown, is you've worked in politics for a really long time. You know, you've got to witness firsthand the negative effects of policies that favor some and don't favor others. Moving forward, what do you think are some important policies that we should push to see some change amidst so many egocentric decisions being displayed in the press right now? What are some policies you think we should be working for and pushing for to kind of move with an optimistic approach?
Well, first of all, let me tell you, you just made a serious mistake by saying that you all you can eat is
Uh-oh.
eggs sometimes, because now Mrs. Brown is going to make me come down to your dorm room with food at least twice a week. So get ready.
Oh,
But
well, that's a
because
blessing.
she listens to the show, so she's going to be like, you're going to have to t I'm going to cook for her, and you're just going to have to take it down to her. But anyway, well, in all seriousness, the policy that is most important to me, I think, is universal health care. I think you're right. I think it's a basic right. And Obamacare was, for lack of a better word, was a step in the right direction. But we still don't have universal health care, and we need that. And I think we need a universal basic security. Now, you're for people, you're much too young to probably remember this, unless you studied it in American government or something. But there was a plan put forward under Richard Nixon, of all people. I've been a loyal Democrat my whole life, but this was a brilliant plan, and it was pushed by a Democratic senator named Moynihan, and it was a negative income tax. And a negative income tax works at there's some basic level that we set for you, and then after that, we pay you for however far you drop below that level. So if we say your basic income should be $25,000 a year, and you make $18,000 a year, then the government makes up $7,000 in benefits so that you reach that basic level so that you can survive. Right now, people love to talk about welfare, especially Republicans. There's people out there having babies. They're having babies just to have money. Man, you're crazy. If you say that, it's because you've never had a baby. There ain't enough money in the world to compensate you for all the work and effort it takes to have a baby. Nobody's having a baby because it's an investment in, like putting money in a 401k. It's which is another thing that bothers me these days, by the way. But so I think we have to, that's another important policy, is to secure a basic income for people. And there is no welfare, just so people know that. There's aid to families with dependent children, and there's food stamps, and there's a handful of programs. But you have to have kids. If you're single and you don't have a family, you're on your own, pal, unless you get unemployment or Social Security or something like that. So I'd like to see a framework put together so that people don't fall through the cracks. So many bankruptcies, and that ties back into the whole healthcare thing. So many bankruptcies in America are tied to medical bills. So many people go bankrupt because they can't afford the medical bills. So those are the policies that I'd like to see us face. And I also would like to see us stop backing out of inner, we've pissed off every ally we have in the entire world. The Europeans are out there protesting against us. Canadians don't want to buy anything. They're booing the American hockey team when it plays there. They're not buying American products. Who haven't we annoyed? I mean, Christ, we've put tariffs on an island that's full of penguins. We put tariffs on the Vietnamese. We put like a 40 some percent tariff on their goods when they have a 2% tariff on American goods. These guys don't know what they're doing. So I'd like to see us pursue a policy, not back out of the United Nations, not back out of the Paris Peace Accords, not back out of the environmental accords that we've signed throughout the world. But, you know, we're bringing people together, being involved in NATO. These are important things to stabilize the world. Those are other policies I'd like to pursue. But let me ask you, what obstacles? Look, when I got out of college, I had no doubt that I would have a good job and that I would have a career. What do you think are the obstacles that stand in your way? Do you, when you look at what you have to do, I know you've talked about graduate school. I went to graduate school. Is this something you feel you have to do? Do you have to go to graduate school to have a decent career? And what do you think?
Well, you know, I think that's a really valid question. And I think my willingness and even ability and desire to go to graduate school really depends on the economy, right? Because if I'm in a position where I can't rely on my healthcare, I can't rely on our pharmaceutical industries to be able to help me out on my basic rights to health, right, with healthcare. If I can't rely on welfare systems to be able to help me support my kids, am I willing to invest $100,000 annually to get a graduate degree? And, you know, the big dilemma is, well, if I don't invest that money, will I be able to have a salary that can keep up with the lifestyle I need to be happy? So that's what's going through my mind right now, that how am I going to get there? And, you know, is it really necessary to be there? I think so. So my dream is to pursue that graduate degree. And I wish that I had that dream, not because of necessity, but because of desire to learn, which is why, you know, education should be there in the first place. But I think that it's really hard right now in the certain conditions of our economy and in the certain state of the policies we have supporting us as individuals and as society. You know, I think the United States has been very strong over time. And, you know, even a lot of the policies you mentioned, they've been really strong in maintaining policies and power that creates an independent life for the American citizen. And I think that's one of the most beautiful liberties of living in this country, that you're able to come here, you're going to have a great education, even if you choose public education, you're going to have great financial opportunities after that. And, you know, it really is the land of the free. The white picket fence dream is something attainable. And that was such a big soft power for the world, you know, when the United States got to Germany in the 1950s, late 40s, it was really monumental to see the American movies and understand how good life was in the United States, how not only did we have basic rights and liberties to health, but we had the freedom of white picket fences and many different cereal boxes to choose from. And so as I digress, you know, my worry is, are we going to continue to evolve and continue to inspire ourselves on these soft powers and on these liberties that excel past basic rights as a citizen? Because that's what really showcases our power on the world stage. You know, not only are we screwing over every other country with tariffs, but we're no longer a country to inspire others to be. Now we're kind of just slowing down on our progress and reverting so many policies, as you mentioned, that focus on happiness in the American lives. So really, to answer your question is, and please, if you have any interjections, I'd love to hear what you have to say on that.
Well, no, let me just say I think your perspective, that you have an interesting perspective because you travel and that you understand how people in foreign countries feel about the United States. And so do I. We have been an inspiration. We are what Ronald Reagan called that bright, shiny, you know, city on the hill. And we are losing that. We see that, and we see, and I see it. I was just in a conference late last year in Brazil. And I was also I've been in conferences recently in Portugal and India. And this is a concern in all those countries. In every one of those countries, people mentioned to me that whole image of the United States and how they felt that was waning. So that's very, very important. Yeah, I think that, you know, through fear mongering, and that's what these people are doing, they've convinced a lot of people in America that maybe don't have the experience of going around the world, that somehow we've been taken advantage of by the world, which is ridiculous. We've taken more advantage of the world than the world has ever taken of us. And two, that these things you talk about are going to go away. If we don't put up a wall, if we don't guard ourselves against everybody but us, you know, make America, you know, first of all, you're right. We don't need to make America great again. We just need to remember who the hell we are. You know, we've always been great.
Absolutely.
And we need to get back to that. And number two, it's, you know, we've gone from the Statue of Liberty, right? Emma Lazarus' poem, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free." We've gone from that to putting up a wall that says "keep out." And when they say "make America first," put America first, that's not what they mean. They mean America only. And the world knows that, and we should know that too. And we need to stop that. You know, I don't understand what this one world stuff is about. Why so many people are afraid to be engaged with the rest of the world. That's what we should be. You know, we shouldn't. No single country is going to solve the problem of global warming. We're not going to do that. We need the cooperation of everybody in the world to do that. We're not going to solve the rampant poverty that we see all around the world unless we get together. And we have an opportunity here for the first time in the history of mankind, because of technology, to bring us all together and to stand in the, mm-hmm. And it scares people. I don't know why, but it does. So they're trying to stand in the way of change. And these people have just been horrible about it. I know that they recently sent a Maryland man to that horrible prison in El Salvador and said it was a clerical mistake. And then after admitting that it was a clerical mistake that sent him there because he was in this country legally, they're now saying he was a member of MS-13. You know, it's horrible. They're willing to lie about anything. And they have an agenda, and they really don't care about the truth. I mean, how the hell did we get elect a man who told us a few months before the election, not even a few months, a month before the election, that foreigners were eating our cats and dogs? I mean, we laughed about it, but isn't it sad that we've lost, you know, that we elected this man? And as Democrats, we need to take responsibility for that. And we need to figure out what it is about us that made people decide that, you know, it was better to elect a man who would tell us this nonsense than to elect our candidate. We really need to do that.
I completely agree with you. You know, I think that in times like this, we really need to sit back as Democrats and look at ourselves and think, wow, are we really less popular than this guy? You know what I mean? Like, it's a hard decision to have to face. But I think really reforming ourselves is what's going to bring the most change. And, you know, you talk about rapid technological advancements that we're facing and how it's, you know, making globalization so important. It's really putting everything that we do right now on such a big stage. You know, with all this technology advancing, with all of the freedom to share and opinion that comes with that, how do you think as Democrats we should be better using that network? Because I know that when you were young, when you were probably in college and my age, you had huge movement come along in the media with the TV, right? And I think that might have totally changed the political game as well, you know, because that's how people get their news source now. So how do you think with these technological advancements that the Democratic Party should be choosing to evolve technologically as well, maybe in terms of media and what message they're putting out there and what groups they're attracting even, because a lot of the people being jeopardized right now are Latinos, and the Latino community was the one who stood for Trump the most. So, you know, how can we push forward with technology, just like I feel the Republican people, the Republican branch did a little better even.
Well, their latest move with technology, I think, is going to help us. And that is, I told you this earlier, I read today, because of tariffs, the new iPhone is now not going to cost $1,100. It's going to cost $3,500. So
wow.
for all those young guys out there who voted for Trump and who supported him because he thought he was a badass, I hope you keep that in mind when you go to buy your new iPhone. But, you know, yeah. one of the things about the technology that bothers me, and, you know, if you're out there listening and you have something to say about this, please call in at 888-627-6008. But I think that when we talk about technology, the Democrats are even talking about it. They're not talking about it in the right way. They're talking about how can we manipulate it in such a way to get people to like us. And I don't think that's the problem. I don't think the problem is us trying to figure out, you know, how we can better, you know, fool the electorate than or better appeal to the electorate, as much as it is what we have to change our message as much as our method. And our message, I think, has been wrong lately. We've lost touch with the American people. You know what I mean? Look, the transgender thing was just stupid on our part. It was just stupid on our part.
It was.
I believe that transgender people should have all the same rights everybody else has. But I don't want to see them in women's sports. Nobody wants to see Shaquille O'Neal playing in the WNBA just because he decided all of a sudden that he wants to be a girl instead of a boy. And the Democrats should have realized that, right? They should have said, maybe a different accommodation. Maybe we have to figure out a different accommodation for transgender athletes who want to compete. Let them compete against each other. That's fine. But, you know, you can't take a guy that's 7'2". In a Duke basketball game last night, there's a college kid that's 7'2" on their team. You're going to put him in against girls in basketball? It's crazy. You can't do it. So I think we miss the forest for the trees sometimes, and we need to correct our message. We need to say, we hear you, and we hear the things that are important to you, and we need to adjust our policies on the basis of that. And you know, I've railed against this for a long time with progressives in D.C. They wanted to let 16-year-olds vote. So I wrote a piece that, you know, we won't let them drive in D.C. You can't have a driver's license in D.C. if you're 16. You can only have a provisional license where you have to have an adult with you and blah, 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 you know, and we're going to let them vote. They also, in D.C., we do allow undocumented people to vote in local elections, undocumented people. Now, voting is a right of citizenship. I'm sorry. You have to be a citizen to vote. I'm against you having to prove that you're a citizen, but we shouldn't extend. Progressives have gone too far on the left, and we need to realize that, and we need to pull it back. And that's not a capitulation. It's just a realization that we've all joined together in this great experiment that we call democracy, and we've agreed that we will work together, not as independent groups, but together. Donald Trump is the president of the United States. He's my president, as well as the MAGA president. And I have to accept that. And we have to accept that as Democrats and say, you know, we have to work with everybody in America. And it's not just about what's important to us. We end up being the, you know, we think God is on our side, so we think we're right. But we end up being in many ways the same way the extreme right is on the extreme left. We're very much the same way. You know, I've had I had a friend that wanted to work for NOW. She wanted to help the National Organization of Women because she believed that women should get equal pay for equal work. And she went to them, and she was a fundamentalist Christian. She was a Jehovah's Witness. And they wouldn't take her. They wouldn't allow her to work for them because she didn't believe in abortion. And that's crazy. It's crazy. If she wanted to help them get equal work for equal pay for women, then they should have let her do that. They shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't have to buy everything to get into the club. You should just, you know, you should just say, this is the issue I care about, and this is the one I want to work for, and we need to accept each other. We're not any better accepting Trump people than they are accepting us. Do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
I really agree Trump, with that.
Do you have Trumpers on campus? Are there young people that you know that are like in favor of Donald Trump, or are you pretty much?
You know, there's one. The Trump we do have on campus, I think they like to remain incognito because they know that they're going to be attacked by these 30 people in a room if they say something. And, you know, that's the fundamental issue is that, I mean, if I were a Trump supporter and I walked into a room and I said, hey, guys, you know, I'm thinking about voting for Trump, and the whole room starts throwing tomatoes at me and yelling at me, I would run out of that room, say, screw those liberal progressives, and just dig myself a bigger Trump hole. You know what I mean? And so it's really hard to practice free speech nowadays. And I really agree with you when you say that both extremes are so similar. They really are. I think
I know you. Let me just interject that I know you, and I know you would leave the room, but you'd be back with your own tomatoes. I guarantee.
I would. I would. Me personally, I would come back and I would say, hey, guys, but try these tomatoes, which is what should be happening. You know, the one Trump supporter I ever got a chance to actually have a political conversation with on my campus, I was in a group of maybe four girls. And we start talking to this individual. He says, yeah, you know, I actually support Trump. And the four girls I was with were like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Don't you believe in global warming? What the hell is wrong with you? And he was like, well, you know, I do, but it's for other reasons. And they're like, oh, no, I can't even look at you. And I was like, you know, man, like, let me hear you out. You know, why? And this was in the midst of the Kamala Trump run. I was like, why aren't you cheering for our girl Kamala? You know, if you let these people actually talk, they don't have the most extreme on both sides. If you hear out the crazy progressives and the crazy Trumpies, they don't have a solid foundation to their arguments. It's a lot of passion and not a lot of backing, you know? But I feel like it's so hard for them to actually sit with their thoughts because everyone is having and waiting for their moment to be revolting about something. And even if they're not getting much done, they want a reason to be upset and mad.
And, yeah, you know, and I think this guy doesn't.
Yeah. Absolutely. My question to you is, you know, talking about how people want a reason to be upset at each other nowadays, and talking about how both extremes are very similar, what do you think, and this is a little off topic, but this just is so comical to me. What do you think about our Secretary of Defense, Marco Rubio, saying that for all of the kids and college students in this country who have student visas, if they're planning on coming to this country to partake in any type of protest or social movement, they can be thrown out with their visas, and that any country should do that. You know, do you think it's valid, or do you think in a way that's kind of repressing freedom of speech when we had a bunch of people riot at the White House? You know, is that something just to say? Is that validating some types of thought processes and unvalidating others? You know, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's validating that if you're from another country, you're just not as good as we are. You're not as equal as we are. You can't come into our country and tell us what we should be doing because we're superior somehow. And that plays into their narrative. You know, that plays into their narrative that, you know, all these Mexicans are sneaking across the border and killing everybody and raping everybody. When the truth of the matter is that citizens of the United States cause more crimes than people that come into this country and are trying to get citizenship. I mean, you know, it even defies logic. If you snuck into anywhere, a country, a movie, a shopping mall, anywhere, the one thing you'd want to do is keep it on the down low. You don't want to get arrested. You don't want to commit a crime. Because you want to go unnoticed, right? You want to stay below the radar. So it even defies logic. But I think you're right. I think it plays into their narrative of, you know, they're not Americans, you know. And look at how we've done this with everybody. The Canadians, we want them to be the 51st state. And we don't have to ask them because everybody wants to be an American. Because we're the best people on the face of the planet. And who cares about the Canadians? They're just American wannabes. Well, that's not the case, actually, is it? And they're showing us that it's not the case. But that's the mentality that these people play into. That, you know, everybody wants to be us. Everybody else wants our jobs. Everybody wants our money. Everybody wants, you know. This country was built on immigrants. My father's family came over shortly after the Mayflower and has been in this country. I'm a direct descendant of a Revolutionary War soldier. I'm a son of the American Revolution. And my mother was a first generation American. Both of her parents immigrated from Italy. They met in this country, you know, and that's what America is. It's a country full of immigrants. You know, you and I, Liberty, just worked on an election to get the first Native American elected to a position in the Democratic Party. If you're not a Native American, and there are damn few of them, one of your ancestors came into this country. And we all like to think we were royalty, right? Yeah, we're all in Europe, like, you know, rich and famous. And we just said, hey, let's all go to the United States and see what's happening. No, we were poor. We were destitute. We came here because we were starving. The Irish were starving. The Italians were discriminated against. You know, the Latinos were discriminated against. When we came to this country, the only ones that didn't come to this country because of that were African Americans, and they were drug here against their will. But so, you know, this plays into their narrative. I think you're right when you ask that question. And you know, we look at what they're doing. They removed 400 books from the library at the Naval Academy. Now, these are our future leaders. Let me tell you, people that come out of the Naval Academy, you know, my brother was an instructor at the Air Force Academy, and I could tell you, these people go on to be military leaders. They go on to be the future colonels, generals, astronauts. Those are the people that lead in the military. And we've just removed all the books from the Naval Academy library that have 400 books that have to do with diversity and inclusion, so that we can get, so that they can comply with the what the White House demand is. Now, let me tell you something. If we can't have an effective military force without diversity and inclusion, women play such an important role in the military, and minorities play such an important role, social minorities, because that has always been a way for upward mobility in the United States. These guys, you know, Donald Trump has taken over the Kennedy Center. This is he, one of his aides said he did that because he has such a remarkable taste in music and art. The guy used YMCA as his theme song. Not exactly Mozart, but you know, they're trying to rewrite our history again to fit into their narrative. And that's exactly what the communists do when they take over. So let me ask you another question. What do you want? What do you want? I know I've already heard you say children twice. So I assume you want a family and you want children. What else do you want?
You know, I want us, and I think what the point you bring up is really valid. I don't want us to forget our history. And I want us to remember our history despite all of, you know, books being banned and education departments being dismantled. You know, I think it's really important to remember that nowadays they say approximately 10% of the United citizens come from Irish descent. And back in the day when the Irish first got here, they were highly discriminated against. Yes, and that makes up 10% loosely of our population. And we've completely lost sight of a lot of our history. We've completely lost sight of the morality that took us so far internationally. We completely lost sight of all of the aid. You know, we lost sight of doing good for doing good as Americans and not doing good for retribution. And I think that's something really important in our country, is making sure we don't lose the hit. You know, you say you're a son of the revolution. That's our history, you know, standing up for what we believe in and standing up for making sure all people feel included. And I think that's something really important. I don't want us to forget what brought us to our success. You know, when we're talking about, you know, we're formulating this entire ideal that America's not great and how to do it again, you know, of course, returning to the past, but we're looking at the past completely wrong. And I don't want all of this chatter on what needs to be to help us to lose sight of what actually made us great to begin with, which I think is really easily done when we're constantly problematizing our present, is to forget, you know, where the good actually came from. So that's what I want. I want us to remember what made us the land of the free, which was immigration. We were a melting pot to begin with. That's why people felt free here, because there were all types of languages being spoken. You know, the world speaks English because everyone wants to be part, or for a while, you know, and I'm saying this with immigrant parents, everyone wanted to be American for a long time. And now people laugh at this country. And I think that's what we need to remember, that it's the land of the free, that it's the land of compassion, that it's the land with open doors. And right now we're closing our doors so heavily, we're even building walls. I mean, what is that about, man? I want us to remember history even when Angela Davis books are being forgotten, you know, when banned. Yeah. Obviously not forgotten, but definitely banned. So, you know, my question to you is, what are some of your favorite American morals that you were grew up on, a lot different from the childhood I had, but what were some of the most important morals to you that America taught you back in the day?
Well, that you could be anything, that it was the land of opportunity. Look at me. I mean, I dropped out of high school. My parents mm-hmm. died when I was a kid, and I when I was a teenager, and I took it personally, and I acted out, and I dropped out of high school. I actually got arrested for petty offenses. You know, I never did anything to hurt anybody, but I acted out all over the place, and I got arrested,
Oh
and you
no.
know, and I was just not a very good human being. And you know what? I was able to straighten my life out. I got back into school. I was able to pay my own way. By the way, when you talk about $100,000 a year for law school, I just found out today that Duke University is $90,000 undergraduate. And
Wow.
you know, I put myself through all my through community college, through a 4-year university, through graduate school, and I came out $2,000 in debt. And I paid for everything, my books. Sometimes my books were more than my tuition. My tuition at the University of Maryland was
Yeah.
less than $1,200 a year. That's $100 a month. My kids, I paid $100,000 for my each one of my kids to go through school, and they took out loans. They took out partial loans, and they paid their own expenses. I mean, I paid most of their expenses, but they paid their incidental expenses, and they ate eggs, and you know, and I that was important to me, that this was a country where you could come and you could apply yourself and you could be anything. It didn't matter who you were and where you came from. My grandmother, the other side of my family, the Italian side of my family, my grandmother was a maid when she came to this country. I was a high school dropout who got in trouble and straightened myself out, put myself through college, borrowed $800 from my sister, became a millionaire, and ran for the United States Senate and won 3 times. I don't think there's any country in the world where you could throw your life away at 15 or 16 years old and end up being a United States senator with a graduate school education, you know, and have your own business that made you rich. I think this is the only country in the world. So that was the value I valued most, was that it was, in fact, a land of opportunity. And then I valued the fact that we had become a society that embraced acceptance. You know, we had a horrible past. The way we treated African Americans for 400 years was despicable. But we were a country that was willing to face up to that and try to deal with it. Now, I don't know how that we effectively dealt with it completely, but at least we were willing to try. So those were the important things to me. And I, unfortunately, that's where we have to leave it, because I really enjoy this conversation, and I hope more people will get engaged in the future. And we're going to have a great guest next week. I don't know who it is yet, but we're working on it, and it's going to happen. And you know, I hope you continue to tune in, because we want to be a voice for all those things that Liberty Jones talked about today, all those things that she's afraid we're losing. We want to be a voice, even if it's a voice in the darkness, to be out there, you know, to say this is wrong and we need to change it. So continue to tune in on with us, because we want to make America think again. So be here or be unaware. We want you to know what's going on. We're not going to tell you to vote for, how to feel. We just want you to know what's going on. And today, I'm going to take us back, and I'm going to dedicate this song to Liberty Jones, because she gives me great hope in the future, for the future. And I'm a former hippie. So here's a song from the musical Hair. Here's Aquarius, a song of great hope. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Standing in the shadows of love.